The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 141, a production of GalacticNetcast.com. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, is Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Brad, with brand new specs on, if you're watching the video. Pretty snazzy, Brad.
Yeah, I haven't had a new prescription for glasses since 1994.
Jesus.
So I just haven't worn them. I should wear them, but I don't.
Holy crap. Okay. Well, you look good, and I'm sure that you can see a lot better. Can you see a lot better?
Yeah. At distance, I'm nearsighted, so I couldn't see things farther away. So
just wait till
my driving is going to improve.
Just wait till you get really bad.
And video game playing.
At least you're not wearing trifocals, which is good. Because that's
I do not have bifocals.
That's no fun at all.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
All right, let's jump into the podcast where we talk about beings from everywhere in the universe. Well, not the universe. Extraterrestrials that are not from planet Earth and their appearance in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and real life. The show is kind of cut down into three sections. The news, the craft corner, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft. And our picks for the week. If you want to watch us do the show live, make sure that you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+. We'll let you know when and where that's going to be, or watch the video later at youtube.com/GalacticNetcast. So without further ado, let's get things going here.
In the news.
All right. Have you guys seen the first trailer for the Arthur C. Clarke Childhood's End sci-fi miniseries, Dealey?
Nope.
No, I have not.
It's very cool. Well, it's just kind of a teaser trailer because it's not going to be aired until December. So it's very early on. Charles, you'd recognize the voice of the guy because it's more of a teaser trailer. It's kind of like think of the first Star Wars teaser with just the voiceover. That's kind of the way this one plays out. It's Charles Dance, who plays Tywin Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Okay, yeah.
I've never seen the show, so I don't know who he is, but he sounds awesome. He sounds really great. So he narrates the first teaser trailer, and he's going to be playing the ambassador for the Overlords, and that's what the aliens are called. So I wonder if that comes from the I, for one, welcome our new alien overlords. I wonder if that's where it comes from.
I haven't encountered it yet in the book. It's been very slow going just because we've been busy, and this past weekend was the world's largest trivia contest.
Yes.
So yeah. I spent all my time on the Googles.
I didn't realize that you were reading this book, Anessa.
I've mentioned it in a previous podcast when we mentioned the series.
I always forget things. I forget things in my daily life. I forget things what people tell me, so pardon. So do you like it so far?
Yeah, I like it so far. I think last time they mentioned something about promises being made. The only promise I've encountered so far, and it's not, I don't consider it like a huge spoiler. It's just the big issue that the humans have with their new alien overlords is that they don't know what they look like. And that seems to be the biggest issue that they have, because since the aliens have come along, it's been like the longest stretch of peace ever. And the only promise that I've encountered so far was that they've given them a timeline as to when the aliens would present themselves to humans.
Mm-hmm.
So
sounds awesome.
And that was more to like appease the masses. 'Cause you know, there were like little, groups that were trying to figure things out and kind of resistance, essentially. And But yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it so far, and I'm to the point to where they've already gone past that timeline. But I'm not really going to talk about anything at this point, and it will eventually be a pick for me. So, spoiler
awesome.
Alert.
Okay. So he plays Charles Dance plays the ambassador for the Overlords, and Mike Vogel from Under the Dome. I have no idea who he is. He returns to TV as Ricky Stormgren, a farmer who's been chosen to be the human's ambassador to the Overlords.
Stormgren is the ambassador for quite a while in the book. He goes up to the ship and he talks to the Overlord, but he never sees the Overlord.
Okay.
So.
All right. So that's coming out this December, a miniseries, Childhood's End. I have two stories for the price of one. I've got another kind of Hollywood-y entertainment story. Shooting appears to have started for Independence Day 2. Teen actress, and this kind of came up all of a sudden. I didn't think they were ready to film yet, but I guess they are. Teen actress Joey King, known for her roles in the Fargo TV series and White House Down along with The Conjuring. She plays a character in the new movie and tweeted out Monday that she was about to begin filming the sci-fi sequel with director Roland Emmerich. However, she would not reveal what her role was. Will Smith is not returning to the sequel, but Jesse Usher, best known for his role in the U.S. basketball drama series Survivor's Remorse, has been cast as Smith's son. That's about it. They're filming. I guess they started filming, and Independence Day 2 comes out June 24th, 2016, exactly 20 years to the day, actually, of the first one. So look for that in 2016. All right, let's move on with the news. Brad, what do you got?
I've got scientists scan 100,000 galaxies and see no signs of alien life. Oh. What do ET hunters say now?
Hang on one second, Brad. I got something for that. Hang on. I'm sad.
I was going to go with... Oh, where, are you kidding me right
Fun
now?
With soundboards. Oh.
My soundboard's not working today.
Oh, no. Okay.
Something's up with my... I was going to do the Inception...
Oh, I can do that. Hang on. All right. Okay, go ahead.
See, there we go. You got my back. Just how realistic is it to believe that humans will someday find evidence of extraterrestrial life? NASA's chief scientist recently predicted that we'd find signs of life beyond Earth within a decade or so, but a new study by researchers at Penn State, one of the most exhausted of its type, isn't very encouraging. Now, we talked about this last time, that by 2025, a NASA scientist had stated that we would definitely find alien life, whether it was intelligent or not, just some sort. So this is an interesting follow-up, and that's why I grabbed it. After surveying tens of thousands of galaxies surrounding our own Milky Way galaxy, the scientists turned up no sign of advanced alien civilizations. excuse me. These galaxies are billions of years old, which should have been plenty of time for them to have been filled with alien civilizations if they exist. Dr. Jason T. Wright, an assistant professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University Center for Exoplanets and Habitable Worlds.
That's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful and a half.
That's what she said.
Twice. Either they don't exist or they don't yet use enough energy for us to recognize them. Excuse me. For the research, Wright and his colleagues analyzed a vast catalog of observations made in 2010 by NASA's Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, the WISE Space Telescope. The team looked at the heat emitted by the 100,000 most promising candidates of all sky catalogs, nearly 100 million entries. The idea behind our research is that an entire galaxy had been colonized by an advanced spacefaring civilization. The energy produced by that civilization's technologies would be detectable in mid-infrared wavelengths, exactly the radiation that the WISE satellite was designed to detect for other astronomical purposes, Wright said in a statement. Now, the hypothesis that advanced civilizations could be recognized by their waste heat was first put forth by renowned theoretical physicist Freeman Dyson in 1960, according to space.com. Now, Dyson of the Dyson Sphere, Star Trek fans?
Yes, exactly. I think most of us know Dyson Sphere from that one episode, actually.
Yes, from that one episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
The one with Scotty. Scotty's, it's relics.
Yes, yeah. with the return of Scotty.
And there's also a Dyson Sphere in, oh my gosh, I've totally...
Yeah, it's in literature too, but I can't remember what...
It's on the tip of my tongue.
And there's a Dyson...
And there's... Larry Niven.
Okay.
His book. I can't think of the name.
And there's
of the
a Dyson's.
Book, so at least I remember the author.
You think about it while I continue on here. Despite his negative findings, Wright said in his study, published April 15th in the Astrophysical Journal Supplement series, was just the beginning, and that further research may yet turn up evidence of alien technology. And other experts involved in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI, told the Huffington Post that they're far from discouraged. Dr. Avi Loeb, a theoretical physicist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts, states that it's possible alien civilizations are hard to detect because they use much less energy than Dyson proposed. Legendary astronomer Dr. Jill Tarter, the former director for the Center of... Oh, good Lord.
See, bring this on yourself, Brad. You take on these big stories with fancy science words.
I blame the glasses, frankly. I'm going to take another run at it here. Legendary astronomer Dr. Jill Tarter, the former director of the Center for SETI Research in Mountain View, California, and the astronomer on whom Jodie Foster's character in the 1997 film Contact was loosely based, agreed that efforts to find extraterrestrial life should continue. Wow.
I say give up. Let's just give up right now.
Well, what she says is it's absolutely not time to stop.
Oh, okay.
It's time to improve the sensitivity and specificity of these searches to be able to discriminate between signals produced by Mother Nature and those produced by engineers. Now, I think it stands to reason that if you have a spacefaring and advanced civilization, they're going to be using forms of energy that are not inefficient and do not waste a lot of energy to heat. Mm-hmm. That just seems to make sense to me. I mean, you know, we talk about futuristic things like zero point energy and things like that. That doesn't give off heat. It might give off some radiation of some sort, but it does not waste energy being given off to heat. So I think it's still out there. We just haven't found it. And I think that they're more advanced. And, you know, a physicist came up with this idea in 1960. Now, I'm not going to knock that because, you know, a lot of Einstein's theories still hold up today over 100 years after the fact. But
no one's perfect. You know, and that was
no one's perfect.
That was over 50 years ago. So maybe it's time to readjust a little bit and improve our methods. Definitely.
I definitely agree with that. And I think that Dr. Jill Tarter is probably more correct.
I mean, heck, the character of Jodie Foster's character was based off of her. So come on.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to our final news item. And that would be Anessa. What'd you bring to the table there, Anessa?
Okay. While Brad's story talks about how, you know, there's no signs of alien life that they can detect, my story is the complete opposite. UFO spotted in 55-year-old space photo. Conspiracy theorist says image proves aliens have been watching NASA's progress.
I knew it.
I know. We're going to hear a familiar name in this story. We haven't mentioned him in a while, I think. But anyway, UFO researcher Scott Waring says he has spotted an extraterrestrial spacecraft in a 55-year-old photo from NASA's Mercury project. Scientists say radical claims such as this are a simple case of pareidolia, which is the psychological response to seeing significant items in random places. The image was taken by unmanned space probe Mercury Redstone 1A on December 19th, 1960. Why wouldn't aliens be interested in watching a historical moment in human history? Asked Waring in his blog. Especially since the capsule was unmanned, there were no worries that they would be seen. The image was taken as part of Project Mercury, which was the U.S.'s version or first mission to put humans in space. It started in 1958 and ended in 1963. The objectives of the program were to orbit a manned spacecraft around Earth, investigate man's ability to function in space, and to recover both the astronaut and spacecraft safely. The first United States astronaut was Alan Shepard, whose suborbital flight of the Freedom 7 space capsule on May 5, 1961, was the first success of the Mercury program. It's actually the Earth in the background and the UFO in space observing the Mercury capsule, Waring said. This isn't the first time UFO hunters have scoured old NASA images in the hope of finding evidence of alien life. And that's from the Daily Mail.
So take it with a grain of salt.
The fact that they've got Scott Waring, I kind of agree with the scientists, the psychological response to seeing significant items in random places.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's like when people find items on Mars or things that look like common items.
Right. It's like, oh, there's a face on Mars. Oh, there's a coffin on Mars. Oh, you know, there's whatever, a hot dog on Mars.
I'd like to see that one.
I was just trying to think of things that they would see. And people on Mars got to eat, right? Martians, yeah. they have to eat something. Why not hot dogs?
And if they have baseball games, they'd have to have hot dogs, right?
Exactly. Or Blurn's ball, whatever. Reference to Futurama.
I really think that maybe aliens like to photobomb.
Maybe. Maybe they know that there are so many skeptical people on our planet that they know that even if they are seen, the person talking about, you know, the event or showing them the photograph or video, they know that no one's going to believe that person because what they're saying is so outlandish. So maybe the aliens are really smart and they're just hanging out because, you know, no one's going to believe that guy.
Or they could be alien time travelers who want to come back and watch our history.
Maybe, but still, even if they're time travelers and they're seen, like, no one's going to believe Joe on the corner saying, hey, I just saw an alien. Be like, yeah, okay, whatever, Joe. It's old crazy Joe.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
Exactly.
All right, cool. So I guess, hey, if you guys have input, if you have feedback on this, if your argument's either way on this, we'd like to hear it. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. Or you can call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Any more before we move on to the craft corner, Anessa?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Let's play the old intro music. Here you go.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Long, slender colander objects? Is that what it was? Is that what Daryl thought he said?
Yes.
He heard? Okay.
All colander.
Right. Welcome
We're
to
straining.
Welcome to the Craft Sorry. Corner. It's our look at a craft, an alien spacecraft, either from actual quote-unquote real life or in fiction, and I chose to go for the real deal this time, and the craft is a cross-shaped UFO. You thought we were done with shapes, right? No, they keep on coming. It's the cross-shaped UFO. Apparently, the aliens are Christian. So,
well, taking Christianity out of the picture, the cross is a very simple design.
Yeah.
So maybe it was just easy for them to build.
Exactly.
To travel through space.
Maybe the Christians were inspired by the alien craft that they saw back in 0000. I don't know. Or no, it'd be the Romans, right? It'd be the Romans, because they were the ones that crucified Jesus on that cross. So it was the Romans' deal. They were inspired by the alien craft. I don't know.
But was the cross first seen there, or did they? Well, I guess. I mean, if they were, you know, hanging people or whatever, hanging them up on a cross, then the cross has been there for a while, but it just didn't become significant until they hung a particular person on the cross.
That's true. That's very true. I don't know. Chicken and the egg.
I don't know. Who knows? Okay.
So sightings of these craft are comparatively rare, so it's hard to determine the general configurations. Its size seems to vary from jet fighter size to extremely large. Colors reported for this craft are varied, but several have been seen to have been, or no, back up. But several have been seen to have white lights at the cross extremities and red or bright red in the center, occasionally pulsating. On several occasions, smaller craft have been seen to join and leave the main craft, with colors of the smaller craft reported as bright orange or green. Several reports have remarked on the craft's hovering ability in one spot, and also its ability to fade in its appearance. So maybe it's going from one dimension to the next. That whole fading effect could be a dimensional shift. Who knows? Electrical disturbances have also been reported with this craft. So I've got a couple of reports for you, and I'll try to make these quick. This is report number one. During the middle of the summer in the year 2000, while visiting a father-in-law's... This is me as the person reporting this craft, okay? So, during the middle of the summer of 2000, visiting father-in-law's farm in northwest Ohio, while outside watching birds with my wife, I was scanning the sky when I noticed... at first thought to be a bird we were looking at. Then I thought it was a small plane circling high overhead. It wasn't a bird, no movement of wings. It was a distinctive plane-shaped rigid. The object did not appear to be that high for its size. It wasn't private plane. It seemed too small, and I started thinking it was a remote-controlled device, but it seemed too high for that. There was also no sound at all. Not the sound of a plane in the distance or the distinctive whine of a remote-controlled plane. I noticed that it was flying lazy circles like a bird, but a very rigid flight. Suddenly, the object took off, shooting toward the northwest in a straight line. It disappeared from sight. It went very fast, gone in a second, and again, it was a perfectly straight flight path. It shot off like a gun fired it. It did not descend or make any bird-like movements, no noise, and it went too far to be a remote-controlled toy. So that's report number one. Are you guys convinced yet that this is an alien spacecraft?
I may have to hear more.
Okay, well, good thing we've got two more reports here, so listen up.
What?
While visiting relatives in Puerto Rico in December 1997, we witnessed a cross-shaped UFO. I noticed it initially, and at first thought it a large jet at extremely low altitude. Unlike a jumbo jet, there was no engine noise, and its position in the sky didn't change. It was hovering over what I could see in the dark was a large parking lot full of what appeared to be delivery vans. It was roughly cross-shaped, with white lights at all four ends of the cross shape. These white lights were steady and did not blink. There appeared to be something in the center of the underside, however, I cannot remember too much detail. Also off-center, on the underside was a flashing red light, which at first led me to believe that it was a plane. If it was a plane, it was motionless. I considered it a helicopter, but it was twice as large as the building it was over. All the witnesses were college-educated, and despite the date, New Year's Eve, no one had been drinking. Okay, so I'm glad he clarified that.
Because otherwise people be like, oh, you've had some booze. That was totally why you saw what you saw.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here's the third and final report. I had just been walking back from the shop when I noticed two T-shaped object, objects in the sky. They moved swiftly and rapidly through the sky. It had a strange mist or fog around it. As a gas, it seemed to make the T-shape fizzle in and out of reality. So that's the second report with that whole kind of phasing in and out of reality. The T's changed direction every 10 seconds or so. So the T's traveled north, whereas I faced south. The T's sped toward me. It was so fast they went over the top of me at the height of about 50 feet. After the incident, a tail of what can only be described as a floating water was left like slug trail, like a slug's trail, if you've ever seen a slug's trail. That's my favorite report of these three is that last one. It's very descriptive and different from the other two.
I was going to say it's a lot more descriptive in my opinion.
Yeah. Frizzle. He used the word frizzle. Mm-hmm. I like that. So there you go.
Miss Frizzle from the Magic School Bus is what I think of.
So add this to your list of objects to be looking for in the sky, a T-shaped UFO in this week's Craft Corner.
I keep thinking when I hear frizzle, I keep thinking of Snoop Dogg.
And I was thinking the same thing, too. Yeah, exactly.
Frizzle my nizzle.
Frizzle my... Oh, I thought it was frizzle my dizzle.
Or perhaps that, too.
Grizzle?
I suppose it's what you're going for as to which one you would use.
Oh, you...
All right. Yeah, I'm sure Snoop has seen a few UFOs in his time.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe he is an alien.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know what's crazy? He's younger than I am, and he's like a grandfather. It's so weird to think of that. It's weird to think of Snoop Dogg as younger than I am. It's only by a couple of years. But then it's weird to think of him as a grandfather. Not because of the age, just because of who he is, Snoop Dogg. It's weird. I don't know.
Grandpa Snoop.
I saw him at the on the Justin Bieber roast. He was pretty good, actually. He's probably one of the funniest ones on that.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. He seems like someone that would have a good sense of humor. And just seeing him on the music video that Psy did of Hangover.
Oh, yeah.
Where you've got, like, right off the bat, Psy is... bent over a toilet and you've got just Snoop Dogg just like slapping him on the back to the beat of the music, of course. I guess slapping someone on the back when they're yakking is the thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Personally, when I'm sick, I would rather not have someone hit me on the back.
True that.
Trying to get the stuff out. It's like a ketchup bottle. You know?
Maybe. Unless, you know, Psy was choking, then I could see that being somewhat helpful.
And yeah. You just give him the Heimlich over the toilet. Hey, you know what? We should do our picks.
Yeah. No, that was a nice tangent, though. I like that. Okay. Brad, anyway, Brad, you're up
first.
Yeah,
if people are curious, Psy, P-S-Y, Hangover, most of it's in Korean, but Snoop does rap in English.
So. I haven't been interested in Psy since his second hit, which was terrible. After Gangnam Style...
The
follow-up was, it was terrible.
I think that was like the Mother, Father, Gentleman.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. For some reason, I enjoy it, but at the same, well, I enjoy it in that it has a good beat to like walk and jog to.
Okay. Yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah, you're right. You're totally
that's
right.
Usually the only time that I listen to it is if I'm on the treadmill and I need a steady upbeat beat to walk to or something, then I think it's great.
Next up on Psy Talk.
That's a great pick. That's an early pick for NASA. Let's get into the actual picks. Brad, this is a movie that I've had my eye on for a long time. In fact, we reported on it way before it came out. So what do you got as your pick?
Yep. Well, I finally bit the bullet and decided to watch Earth to Echo, which came out last year. And in my mind, if you were to take The Explorers, which is a great movie with River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke back when they were teenagers, then you could take Stand By Me, which, you know, had Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
And you take the movie E.T., and you mix them together and have a baby. That's what Earth to Echo is.
Oh, I kind of got that vibe from watching the trailers for it.
Yes, it follows the story of three kids who are leaving this community, and the community is leaving because there is a overpass project that is going to be built in the area, and they've bought out the homes, and they're going to demolish them so that they can put this huge bypass system in that area. So on the last night of when they'll all be together, because one of the kids is moving to New York, and this takes place in Nevada, just for point of reference. So one of the kids is going to move to New York, and you're not 100% sure where the other two kids are going to be moving. But this is their last night to be together and hang out. And they get one of the kids has an issue with his phone, and it's displaying that he's got a smartphone, and it's just displaying this weird thing. And it turns out that it's not just his phone, it's other phones in the area. And one of the kids finally realizes that it's a map. Ooh. And they're being prompted to go somewhere. Actually, it's trying to just send out a message to have somebody come to this area. And these kids are the only ones to actually figure out that it is a map. So the kids go on this adventure on their bikes. It's really interesting because one of the kids, Munch, is his nickname. He seems to be on the autism spectrum. He's got to alphabetize his stuff. He needs to organize his packets of ketchup. And he has these idiosyncrasies that are kind of are associated with autism. So it was kind of interesting to see a portrayal of somebody that was possibly on the spectrum and have him be a part of this great adventure that these kids go on. And just like in The Explorers, eventually they run into a girl classmate and she joins the group. Overall, the movie is very interesting. It seems to be lacking something, and I'm not sure what it is. The movie definitely is well-paced. There are high stakes to get what they're trying to accomplish done. Not everything is as it seems, as the children find out later on in the film, as they are working with this robotic organism called, that they named Echo, to get him to be healthy again and to help him leave, because that's what he wants to do. Wants to leave Earth.
Maybe the thing that you're missing is that Spielberg magic from the 80s. You know, we're so used to that, those type of films being so good, that without that magic, that little ingredient, maybe it feels like it's lacking.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not. Yeah. And there's one key element of this, especially the ending. Okay. One of the things is, unlike Spielberg, this is done in kind of a found footage format. In other words, one of the kids, now his name escapes me. It's, Tuck is his name. It's his nickname. So Tuck is a video file, and he's got a camcorder, and he's got a pair of spy glasses that he has with a camera on the side. They're eyeglasses with a camera on them. And he's got his smartphone camera, and this whole movie is kind of pieced together from these points of view. He's got a GoPro that he's got mounted to his bike as well, as they make their journey. And so this whole thing is pieced together. And it's interesting. Like I said, it's missing something. So I would give it, out of 5 stars, I'd give it 3.
I think we should go on a saucer scale. So out of 5 saucers, how many saucers?
3 out of 5 saucers, Dave.
All right. We should start doing that for our picks. We'll go on a saucer scale from now on. All right. We'll have the links to that, or link to that, in the show notes. Maybe you can check it out on Amazon. All right, Anessa, what's your pick?
My pick is a short video called The Shift. And it takes place, I guess, probably in the late 50s, early 60s is the setting that they've done. And, you know, it's got the stereotypical housewife that, that cooks, she cleans. And I guess, you know, the Donna portrayal of the 50s housewife. And her husband comes home one day and she looks the same, but she's different. And she essentially says, I'm not going to cook anymore. And these are the things that you can now expect. And these are all the things that I'm not going to do.
So she's laying down the law.
She's laying down the law and he has no idea what's going on. And it has very much of a maybe Invasion of the Body Snatchers sort of vibe. Like, it's a really short flick, so I don't want to give away like a ton of stuff, but that's the vibe that I get from it. So if you have like 8 minutes to spare, if you hate it, well, you're only down 8 minutes of your life. I liked it. Like, I think for me, I appreciated more of the set. And I know it's weird, but I actually really enjoyed the little details that they did. You know, like the very beginning says by Technicolor, and you've got like the old vehicles and the white picket fences, and you have like the appropriate attire. And I think they did a really good job at portraying that particular time period. The idea isn't entirely original, but overall I liked it. So I suppose if we're going on the scale, then yeah, I would probably give it about 3 saucers out of 5.
How was the quality of the film? Like, did it look professional, like a Hollywood par with Hollywood films?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it was very crisp and clear. Probably much better video quality than you would get from the 60s. 50s and 60s. But yeah, the video quality was great. It didn't look like a high school film project.
Okay.
So it looked like someone that had, at the very least, had a lot of practice at shooting film, or maybe did this for a living and decided to just kind of go off and do a few independent flicks on their own, short films on their own, or maybe they were trying to build up their portfolio. But yeah, it's pretty good quality.
And the best part is, it's free.
It's free and on Vimeo.
Okay. We'll have the link to it in the show notes for The Shift and for Brad's Earth to Echo, so you can check those out for yourself. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of The Alien Invasion. Don't forget you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and leave us 5 stars and a favorable review. That helps us get more listeners. And the most important thing you can do is tell your friends and family about The Alien Invasion. Okay. Also, don't forget you can leave us feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, and join the Galactic Collective as well. Go to our website, galacticnetcast.com, click on the collective little logo in the upper left-hand corner, and all the details are there. Final thoughts, Brad, what's yours?
As of right now, Daryl Johnson has seen Avengers Age of Ultron, and I'm very jealous.
Yeah.
Daryl, our listener, Daryl, being in the UK, and that is premiered in the UK, Britain, first.
Yeah.
And we won't see it until the beginning of May.
Curses.
Foiled again.
All right. Anessa, let's close it out. What do you got?
Ringworld by Larry Niven is what I was trying to remember.
Boom.
That's where the Dyson Sphere is.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's cool. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This is The Alien Invasion. We'll talk to you next time.
All right.
Woo!
Bye.
Thanks, Dave.
Hello, everyone. Amy Frost here. It's time for another tantalizing tidbit of sci-fi science. That's right. It's the S word. Starting in 2017, you may be able to own your own robot chef. Now, I have a deep love of cooking, but sometimes after a long day, I'm just not in the mood. Enter Moly Robotics RoboChef. Unveiled at a recent technology fair in Germany, the RoboChef consists of 2 dexterous robotic arms with fully articulated hands designed by Shadow Robot Company. They're installed over a cooking area complete with a sink. That's right, it not only cooks, but washes up after. Rather than being programmed to cook like a machine, the system works by recording human actions in 3D and converting them into precise robotic movements. This initial prototype was trained by Chef Tim Anderson, who cooked a variety of dishes in a motion capture studio. During a demonstration, the robot made crab bisque, but Anderson says it can do anything from a bit of prep work to completing an entire dish. Finally, the sous chef I've always wanted to peel potatoes and chop onions for me. According to the Moli Robotics website, they hope to have a consumer version on the market by 2017. It's expected to have a price tag of about 15 grand and would include a few improvements over this initial prototype, including a library of thousands of recipes, a dishwasher, and a refrigerator. It'll even be able to be controlled remotely so you can order your dinner to be ready when you get home. Eventually, they hope to have a version complete with cameras so that you too could train your robo-chef to cook your favorite dishes, then upload them to the recipe library so that other people can enjoy them too. Moli also hopes to add a variety of sensors that would allow RoboChef to compensate for trickier cooking situations, like being able to tell when to stop mixing to avoid overbeating. In the meantime, I'll just have to be content with watching the progress of my order on the Domino's Pizza Tracker. Ooh, it's in the oven. Join me again next week with another story too weird not to be true. For more of me and what I do, visit my blog at nerdlyhome.com. That's nerdlyhome.com. Or give a listen to my gaming podcast, The Overcast, at overcastpodcast.com. Until next time.
You have been listening to a presentation of galacticnetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.